So I'm curious, how did you two work together? Did you walk and talk? Did you sit? Did you make tape recordings? How? Because I'm sure you've got to know each other so well over these 4 years. But how? What were the actual mechanics of making this book?
Well, we met once, twice a week.
Yeah.
About once or twice a week. We would meet at coffee shops, libraries, you know, parks, anywhere we can come together at, you know, we have to meet each other halfway,
uh-huh.
you know, because we both stay in different parts of the city, so we had to get a neutral territory, and 1 week it may be the library.
Library is the best, in my opinion. You know. So, Justin, what did you do as you started writing? Did you run sections past Dan? Did you read them to him, or how did you all exchange ideas about the manuscript?
At first, it was just collecting as many of Dan's thoughts and memories as I could, as we could. Like Dan said, he had this skeleton of notes, I mean, a very powerful framework of notes that he wrote on Death Row, and that was helpful to me because that gave me an idea of what parts of the story were important to him. But as I started to read that and think about how we could make this into a book, I realized there were other parts of the story that Dan hadn't really talked about at all, maybe because he didn't think it was important, maybe because he wasn't ready to start thinking and talking about those parts. And it became apparent that it was my job to help him talk about those parts. And you have a life, you have a life story, so the easiest way is to follow time and build a narrative arc. And so then you go back to childhood, and you start as early as you can, and you move forward from there.
And did you find that people cooperated with you as you wrote this book? Because I imagine, Justin, you did a lot of talking to lawyers and journalists and other people who were involved in the story.
I did, but I really, going back to your earlier question, as I spoke to Dan, initially there were different routes to take with this book. And Dan and I would talk at length about this. And as Dan knows, my mind can wander. I remember at one point we were driving, I said, Dan, this book has to be fiction. It's going to be like a fantastical fiction novel. And Dan said, no, I don't want it to be like that.
Dan, you were right.
but another route the book could have taken, and many journalists do take a book in this direction, is to make it a very deeply reported book where there's a lot of investigative reporting, where you're turning up documents, and that didn't seem right either. And Dan didn't really want to go in that direction. And the book, really, it was Dan's story. It's his memoir. And my job seemed to just be help him flush it out, help him get his thoughts onto the page, and help organize those thoughts. The amazing thing about Dan's book, about any legal story really, is you actually do have documents. You have a record. And in this case, we had the entirety of the transcript, of the trial transcript. And there's a lot of information in there. There's a lot of detail. And that was really the main area of my investigative research. I spent a lot of time in this office down on Barone Street looking through the boxes, the trial boxes, and looking at the transcripts and all the other legal documents. Maybe Dan had something to add about that.
And you know, when Justin was talking, I would tell him certain things. He would look at me. And I've been around guys long enough to know, when you're in prison, you have to become a psychiatrist. You have to become all these different people just to survive. Mm-hmm. So I'm aware of that. So as I'm telling my story to Justin, I can see he's not like, that can't be true. So I said, you don't believe me? I said, go check the documents. You know, for instance, like, I was convicted before lunchtime.
Yeah.
And came back the next day and was given the death penalty before lunchtime. He didn't believe it. He didn't think the justice system can be that corrupt. I said, it's all in black and white. Next week, he would come and say, you're right. I said, as long as we writing this book, I would never lie to you. I would never take you on a ride that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Everything I tell you will be 100% true. A lot of people might be afraid of the truth, but it's going to be the truth. Mm-hmm. If I can't tell the truth, I'm not going to write this book. This book may offend some people. That's the way books go.
Yeah.
That's the way the story have to go. I don't believe in lying, so if you don't want to hear the truth about the justice system, if you really believe in the perfect system, don't read this book. Mm-hmm. And I tell people that.
And there are so many ironies here. I mean, I remember reading in the book about how if you hadn't been on death row, the Innocence Project couldn't have taken up this case just because they don't have the resources. Am I right, Justin, about that?
Yeah, that's something Dan talks about. And it's something that when you start looking into the criminal justice system in this country and some of the gaps, you see that, yeah, death row gets a lot of attention. And as eyes get focused on death row, all these problems are discovered. And I say problems, but problems really means a person wrongfully convicted sitting there literally rotting on death row for a crime they didn't do. And you find those issues because people focus attention. So what is happening in all the places where attention is not being focused?
Right. So how are you doing now?
I'm getting there. I'm still emotionally scarred. You know, like I was telling Justin, when you go to prison, your emotions die off. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to laugh, cry, play all over again like a kid. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting there. I'm not 100%, but I'm getting there.
Well, yeah. This book will help you get there, yeah. I'm sure. Now, Justin, what about you? You moved to New Orleans. You're discovering the city in a lot of ways. What did Dan show you? I mean, how did this make you feel about the place you'd adopted as your home?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I love New Orleans. I'm still here and I'm still loving it. But this book, talking to Dan, opened up a very dark world to me. And I definitely started to see the city differently. And it wasn't always good. You know, it's like putting these glasses on. The city can seem so sunny, so spontaneous, so magical. And then Dan gave me these dark shades and everything was suspect, was blackness, really. It was a bit frightening. And Dan has love and joy for the city too, I think, and that, you know, we fed off each other in an interesting way. Even, you know, there were days when one of us was up and the other was down, and the person who was up tried to keep the both of us floating high, and you know, days when we both were up were obviously good, but days if we both were down weren't so good. And especially in New Orleans, the city really does have its own weather system, and the city can get you down. And I see this sometimes in New Orleans. It's like you put the thermometer out, and it's just it's a difficult day. You know, a lot of people are having trouble that day. And so the city even worked its way into me, and then through Dan it was working into me, and it became its own little storm. And I guess helping Dan to write the book exercised that a little bit, and there's so many positive things happening in New Orleans, and even that we can come together and make a book like this happen, and you all can interview us, that's exciting.
And I tell Justin, you know, there's two New Orleans. There's the tourist part that shows how the partying and how good the city is. And underneath is the real New Orleans. You know, the killing, the robbing, you know, the drug selling, the corruption, the police, the brutality. You know, when you have cops selling drugs, something is wrong.
Right.